African-American
community. That's right. That's about all I knew. I really didn't know too much about Cadillac other than that. I mean, I knew it was used to be considered a luxury car.
Yeah.
But that was the extent of what I knew about it.
Well, my father owned a Cadillac, so.
Okay.
Hey, friend. How you doing? All the information that you are going to hear this evening on Unlikely Friends podcast is for educational purposes only. If you like this type of content, visit us on YouTube and also on Spotify. Like, share, and subscribe. Now, to the podcast.
Hit the damn record.
Hit the damn record. See where it records something. Yeah.
Welcome, everybody, to the Unlikely Friends podcast, where we talk about race, race relations, and what it means to us and everything in between. As you can see, Desma is not with us today because she is unfortunately quite ill. So our friend Adam has stepped in to fill the breach. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you.
Adam, can you tell our audience just a little bit about yourself? You don't have to go into, you know, anything deep, just a little bit about yourself and how we met.
Okay. My name is Adam. I've lived in Istanbul for the past 20 years, actually over 20 years now. I was born in California. My mom's American. My dad is Israeli. I should say was Israeli. He's deceased. I've met... How did we meet, David? When that happens, so...
Yeah, we met through your ex-wife because she and I were working at the same university. I think she only worked there for like 1 year or something, and then she left. I think she left...
Yeah, she, as far as I remember, she didn't work there for very long.
Yeah, she only worked there for a year because I only worked there for 2 years. So I worked there for 1 year, and then she came my second year there. And I think we both left that same year because I left that school to go to a different university to work. So that's how we met. And she told me about it. She was like, oh, you'd love him. He's so smart and blah, blah, blah. And yep. I says, okay.
Yes, this is my cat, Lucifer. I have two cats. This is the less shy one. Yeah. So that's how we met. And so we've known each other for how many years now?
We've known each other since 2012.
Okay, since 2012. Longer than 10 years then.
Yeah, 2012. Yes. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas dinner.
Yes.
What are you bringing?
I was wondering about that.
Yes, what are you bringing?
Well, I was going to bring something sweet like either a banana bread or an apple crumble or something like that.
Ooh, apple crumble is nice. But you know I'm making pumpkin pie, right?
Okay, yes, I do.
Sorry, not pumpkin pie, sweet potato pie.
Sweet potato pie.
Black folks, we don't eat pumpkin pie.
Well, my ex did or does.
But she ain't a real black person, so.
She's. You want to start a war with her on that?
If she heard me say that, she would say, "What?"
Yes. So. But I could bring anything of, I mean, if you prefer something else, I could bring, I don't know, a salad.
Well, you're normally in charge of the cranberry sauce.
Yes, but that's not something I actually make. I just go to the store and buy it. So.
Okay.
But of course, I could get that as well.
You're normally in charge of the cranberry sauce, and Halit was in charge of the drinks?
Bread. Yes.
Bread. Was it bread or drinks?
Usually bread.
Bread. Okay. He's in charge of the bread. He can be in charge of the bread and drinks this time.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't spoken to Ruzgar. So I don't know if he can cook or not, or if he can bring anything or not. I have no idea. I don't even have his number.
I don't think I could share his number with you, but I don't think he will be able to make it because of work.
He's got a job.
He's got a job, yeah. So he's likely not going to be able to do so because it's in retail. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, we'll ask him. I'll ask him if he can come. That's great. If not, I mean.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, well. But he did say that he could come. I didn't speak to him, but Ayub sent him a message, and he said that he could come.
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, kind of, well, based on what Ayub told me, what Ali told me, and so I don't know any more than that.
Okay. All right. I mean, if he can come, that's great. If not, oh, well.
Okay.
There will be other parties. Anyway. Although this will be the second party he missed.
Yeah, well, I know he regrets it. So
I'm just saying.
He said something about keep about missing these events over and over. So
yeah,
yes, I know he isn't happy about that.
All right.
I heard you weren't planning to get a bird, or you changed your mind about it. What?
You know what? I am so fickle. I said that I wasn't going to buy a bird. And then what happened the very next day, I get a flyer thrown over my wall into my yard about the birds being on sale at Ayuz Birsh or A101. And I'm like, okay, I'm not having that many people over, a whole bird. Come on, y'all. But I couldn't resist myself. They were on sale because guess what? The birds that they're selling at Migros are well over 2,000 lira. The one that they have at Carrefour is well over 2,000 lira. And they were selling them at Ayuz Birsh or A101. They were selling them for 1,500 lira. And I was like, I have to get one.
Okay.
So
we could talk about, you know, expenses and, you know, share in some way if you
want. Oh, boy, please. Don't worry about it. I mean, this is... All my pleasure. All my pleasure.
Okay.
So, right. I have the bird.
Mm-hmm.
I have the sweet potatoes.
Okay.
I have the stuffing. I'm going to get to the stuffing as well, as always. I'm going to do the potato salad, because y'all can't do potato salad. And it's true.
Having grown up in Israel, I really can't make any claims about potato salad.
Okay, the turkey, stuffing, potato salad, sweet potato pie. Oh, and I might do a carrot cake. I might. I'm not sure yet. I might. So I'm thinking about doing that. And if Dez comes, you know Dez, she's really sick. She has pneumonia. If she comes, then she's going to bring, because she's always in charge of the mac and cheese. But if she doesn't come because of her illness, I'll do the mac and cheese.
Okay. Well, the only thing I haven't heard you mention is some kind of salad. So, and I would like to actually make something.
Okay.
So I could do that along with, you know, bringing whatever.
I was going to make coleslaw.
Okay, but I could still add.
Yeah, make a salad. Yeah, bring a salad. That's fine. Our first topic for today is...
I think it was about reparations, I believe.
Yeah, slave reparations. I had listened to not a podcast, but it was somebody speaking on TikTok about slave reparations. And it was really, really, really interesting.
Do you recall who that person was?
No, because it was stitched.
It was stitched.
So, and I couldn't find, you know, who this person was, but I think he was running for, it was a black man, he was running for public office. I think he was running to be in, you know, state council or one of the state lawmakers there.
So this was part of some political campaign?
This is a part of they were having a debate. He was on the stage with a debate. And he went in on these people. He was like, I don't want to hear anything about America not being able to pay for, you know, reparations when, you know, when Obama was the president, all of these major corporations and banks got all of these, all of this bailout money in the trillions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not even billions, in the trillions. And then for Obama, it was not for Obama, for Biden, it was the PPP loans that were forgiven. That was in the trillions.
Yeah.
Then it was something else for the Trump administration. What was it? There was something in the Trump administration.
He gave
tax breaks in the trillions, I think.
Yes.
So, and when he says, if we can pay for all of these things in the trillions, why isn't it possible Black people can get reparations? You know, and there was another woman that I was watching, and she said 40 acres and a mule was a lie. She says there were actually some ex-slaves who did actually get some land, not 40 acres, but they got some land from their ex-owners. And nobody got a mule, of course, but that was a promise, 40 acres and a mule, right? So they said, she said that some of them got some land and they were able to work their land. They were able to survive and blah, blah, blah. And then from one day to the next, because Abraham Lincoln had died, that land was taken from them by their owners. Yeah.
Yes.
And
by the way,
and that's why there's no generational wealth in the United States for Black people, and there should be some reparations.
What I didn't know, by the way, about reparations, I didn't know that. In fact, the debate about reparations actually started even before the Civil War, even before the slaves were actually freed. So, I thought, I'm sure like many, that the debate over reparations was a thing that started in the 20th century. But apparently it's much older than that.
Yeah, it is much older than that, but it's being pushed more since like the 70s and the 80s. I've heard more about it. You know, in the 50s and 60s, and it was in the middle of Jim Crow. I mean, they were probably talking about it then too, but not as, you know, prevalent as they are talking about it now. But, you know, my point is, or his point and her point was, you know, if America has all of this money, you know, paying back this in trillions and that in the trillions and this in the trillion, why can't, there's always a resistance for Black people to get reparations, saying, oh, you don't need to be reparated and all. It's like, but why? We worked, or my ancestors worked in this country for free.
Yes.
For decades, hundreds of years in this country for free. So why isn't this available for us? But you have money for this. You have money for this. And also, he also said something about the military getting trillions of dollars for whatever defense aid package or whatever it is.
Right.
It's really interesting because, you know, I never thought of it. I was like, oh, snap. You know, this is in the I mean, come on now. So what do you think? Why do you think that they don't want to do this? I mean, I know why they don't want to do this.
Well, they just don't want to. I mean, it's a I think it's just a matter of not wanting to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there have been, I believe, like various states and also at some point the House of Representatives, I think, issued some kind of public apology for slavery. Okay, but that's just words. Yes, words.
Apology is not going to pay the bills.
As they say, talk is cheap. So, so you know, actually backing this up with money kind of, I would say, shows liability in a much clearer way than just some kind of, you know, statement that says, oh, we're sorry that slavery happened kind of thing.
Shame on me. I just had her name and it just slipped out of my mind. DeGruy, Dr. Joy DeGruy. I'm butchering this woman's name. Her name was Dr. Joy DeGruy Leary.
Leary, okay.
And yes, she is a she's a social scientist. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about trauma, black trauma or slave trauma. Mm-hmm. The name of her book, she wrote a book, it's called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. Mm-hmm. And she was speaking to all of these other scholars that were listening to her talk. And it was a mixed room, of course. But right. But you know how they show a documentary and she's talking about all of this, you know, trauma and trauma is passed on, you know, you just
mm-hmm. yeah.
to one person doesn't mean that. And she was explaining all of this and you can see the literal, not fear, but you can see the that knee jerk reaction that white people have when they are confronted with something about racism. You could see that, why do we have to talk about this? It's like, but you knew what this talk was going to be about, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, this is a jump off point for you, for your deconstruction, and also a learning point. So what can we do to make this better moving forward, right?
Right.
And when they pan the camera into the audience, you can see some of them are just, you know, looking so stern and, you know, just unhappy. And it made me wonder, it's like, geez, are these people, do they want to go there to learn something or they just want to go there to, you know, try and pick apart her argument that she was making because it was based on scientific fact.
Was this an academic venue or?
I don't know if it was an academic venue or not. It might have been a hotel. I have no idea. But I was watching it on YouTube yesterday. And I was sitting there the whole time with my mouth agape. I was like, because you never hear about it. You never hear about it at all. And you don't think that there is trauma, but there is. We black people and also people who have suffered genocide or, you know, slavery or... what's another word that I'm looking for? When you suffer these things, this is carried on from generation to generation. And
yeah.
if there is no point of healing,
mm-hmm. no closure of any sort,
no closure or but the main point is healing. If there's no point of healing, how does this get addressed moving forward? Because it's still just an open wound and an open wound will fester. So mm-hmm. how do you heal that and move forward? And this is the point that, you know, Black America doesn't talk about because we're not permitted to. And it's something mm-hmm. that White America doesn't talk about because they don't want to. So how do we fix that moving forward is my question for many, many, many white people. I can't say that I have any real knowledge of any internalized trauma that I have,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure that it is there. I'm almost positive that it's there. I mean, I would be kidding myself by saying that it wouldn't be. That would be it would be really, really intellectually dishonest. So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, certainly when it comes to, I think they call it intergenerational trauma.
Yeah.
Like
passes. That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
But I've certainly seen enough material about it to show that it's a valid category, a valid thing. Also, I mean, my family also, on my father's side, survived the Holocaust. My great grandfather and great uncles, they all perished there. I recall while teaching at another school, I met the one of the teachers was, her parents were survivors of the Cambodian genocide.
Mm-hmm.
At the time I was looking into that topic, and I think it's definitely there's certainly a strong case for intergenerational trauma when it comes to slavery.
The thing that probably worries me the most is that when it comes to the Japanese internment that happened mm-hmm. during the Second World War,
yeah,
or if it...
They got reparations, right? I believe so.
Yeah, they got reparations.
Yes.
When it comes to what happened in Germany with the Holocaust, mm-hmm. I think also the Jews, the surviving Jews got reparations.
Yes, Germany paid reparations. Yes. Uh-huh.
So what happened to the African Americans, the ex-slaves of the United States, we're always told to shut up, sit down, it's in the past, don't worry about it, we're not talking about it, let's move forward. We're always told to forget.
Mm-hmm.
But no one would ever, ever in a million years say to a Jewish person, oh, forget about the Holocaust, it's in the past.
Yeah.
No one would ever say to someone in, you know, what happened to the Japanese, oh, don't worry about it, it's in there. Nobody would ever think to say that. But people right. always say that to black people in the United States. Oh, it was in the past. Why are you talking about it now? There's no such thing as, you know, what are you talking about trauma? Why? Everybody pull yourself up by your bootstraps, blah, blah, blah. We're always told to forget, always.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. it's annoying. It's dishonest. It's in yeah. bad faith. And I don't know if it comes from a place of just plain old hatred or ignorance or...
I think it's just that, we're talking about white people here, don't want, for the most part, I mean, obviously there are white people who also think reparations is something that should happen, but those that don't, well, one, if you put your money where your mouth is, in a way, mm-hmm. by paying reparations, that's a much clearer admission of guilt as a community, at least as a nation.
Yeah.
People forget talk very easily, you know. It's just those admissions of guilt happened, some of them decades ago. People just move on. Yeah. But if there's, you know, if there's money involved or some other form of material reparation, then, you know, it carries more weight. And I think people just don't want to admit guilt. They don't want to be part of, they don't want to be associated with this. It's easier for them to just say, well, leave the past in the past and just move on. Because, of course, they don't want to be reminded of it. In the case of,
yeah.
for example, the reparations that Germany paid, there was no attempt to escape responsibility.
Mm-hmm. How could they?
No, there was no way. Yeah, but to you know, speaking for what the Germans did, they went through a very thorough process of not only having material reparations, but also going through. I mean, in education, I think Germany is one of those countries where students get a very clear picture of what happened and who is responsible and so on. And there's obviously no attempt can be made to just say, oh, well, that's not our fault. In the case of the Japanese, I think it's simply that Japanese Americans are, of course, a community that has, I mean, it's a community that, it's a small community, basically. So... and also this was not part of a long pattern. There was, of course, discrimination against Asian Americans even before World War II.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can kind of isolate this, pay reparations, and just kind of move on. Yes, it's not something that's on the agenda that keeps being discussed over and over.
Yeah.
Yes, but in the case of slavery, yes, if reparations were to be paid, then obviously, this would be an ongoing thing in American public life pretty much forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of what makes America, America. Yes. It's well, in the, what do you call it? In the east of this nation. So you can't escape it. You can't run away from it. It's always there.
It's literally in the doctrines. The other topic that I wanted to talk about was
mm-hmm.
the German, I'm going to say this word wrong, statistician, yeah, Friedrich Hoffmann. He mm-hmm. was the one that migrated from Germany to the United States in the early 1900s, I want to say. he is the cause of why the United States does not have universal health care. He's the reason.
Interesting. What's the connection?
The connection is that he was the one that wrote not a manifesto, but he wrote a document saying that how black people, African Americans, because he hated black people, he's a white supremacist, he absolutely hated black people, saying to all of the, all of these insurance companies, but he worked at one particular insurance company, saying, look, we do not need universal health care. Universal health care is a good idea, but not now. We should wait. Wait until all of the black people die in America.
Because
he thought that we were disease prone. We had a higher death rate. But he didn't realize how resilient we were. I mean, we lived through slavery, bro.
Yeah, you don't really survive that if you don't have strength, the genetic strength. Yes, the people who were not strong enough clearly died. So the people who survived slavery were obviously made of a strong stock, shall we say.
Stern stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, exactly. So, you don't survive that without it.
Right,
yes.
But it's because of him saying, no, we should wait. He lobbied Congress for years and years and years and years and years.
When did he live, if I may ask?
I have it written down, just a moment. He was born in 1865. He moved to the United States in 1884.
Mm-hmm.
He worked for the Prudential Insurance Company of America in 1891, and he died in 1946.
Huh. I was just wondering because, you know, it's not discussed often these days, but Nazism was popular among some portions of the American population in the 1930s.
They had a huge Nazi movement in the United States.
Yeah, and they had all these rallies, they had all these events that they organized, mm-hmm. they had good connections with politicians and so on. But so I was just wondering if this statistician was somehow connected with that movement or not. But it seems like
he was.
In terms of his opinions, yes, but it seems he was a fairly old person by then. So like when he was writing these documents, when he was writing for the insurance companies,
it was
clearly
in the 1800s, yeah.
Yeah, late in centuries.
He, for some reason, he had it out for black people. He absolutely hated black people. And Germany had, I think, one or two colonies in Africa. And I think that's where it came from, actually.
Could be. But also interesting, by the way, at this point, again, I don't remember the details precisely, but as far as I remember, it was Bismarck in the 19th century who actually started basically the welfare state. He kind of laid the foundations for the welfare state in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting that of all people, a German immigrant who knows what is happening in his home country.
Yeah.
When it comes to social policy, thinks that it's a bad idea. And, well, again, simply because black Americans, African Americans will benefit from it.
Yeah. So the person who torpedoed universal health care in the United States in the late 1800s, early 1900s, was German. And when I saw that documentary, I said, you have got to be kidding me. Because he thought that black people had more frailties, they were more prone to disease, they didn't live as long, even though they had a higher birth rate than white people, they will die sooner. And there is a little bit of truth to that, because black people in the United States are prone to hypertension, heart disease, and it's because of their diet, the food that they were given.
Yeah.
It just wasn't healthy. But anyway, I mean, that's neither here nor there, but this is the reason why we don't have universal health care in the United States, because of this dude.
Well, at least one of the reasons.
Yeah. You know, and when the insurance companies that we do have in the United States, apropos, the one guy that was just the what was his name? He was just killed. Black people, and I didn't know this, they make black people in the United States, they make black people pay a higher premium than white people. Can you believe that? I had no idea.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, of course, if a now values...
This is alleged. Okay.
But basically, if values don't enter into the equation, and you just think about it in terms of risk and value and all those, you know, which have nothing to do with, you know, the values of being human, then it you could say it makes sense. Yes, because as you said, because of poor nutrition, because of other factors, African Americans suffer from certain illnesses more than white Americans, and all that kind of thing. It's kind of, I mean, basically for the same reason that I heard that people who have red cars or other cars that have really bright colors pay a lower insurance premium than others, simply because it's harder to steal those cars.
Really? I heard the opposite, because they're more...
It's more noticeable. See, if someone steals a white car or a you know, some other, I don't know, silver, gray car, something like it, one of those cars that you just see lots and lots of, it doesn't draw so much attention. But stealing a car with a really bright color is harder.
Is that why everybody drives a white car in this country?
I don't know that it's some kind of conspiracy or plan. I think it has to do with other factors too. Because
I think white cars are ugly. I would never buy a white car. Never.
They look pretty most of the time. Yeah. Well, but what I'm trying to say, I just gave this as an example. I just meant if you look at things purely from the standpoint of, okay, financially speaking, what are the likelihoods?
Yeah.
Then, and you say, okay, well, I don't care about if this discriminates against an entire population at all.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could say, well, yes, it makes sense to charge African Americans a higher premium than white Americans, just by showing statistics.
Right. Well,
the same way, like, say, a 70-year-old person would probably, you know, if they just started their policy, would pay a higher premium. No, I'm just gave that example randomly. But I guess what I'm saying is, the older you get, obviously you're more likely to have
the higher the premium, of course, because you're a higher risk.
Yes, what do they call it? Pre-existing condition?
Yeah.
So basically, if you have a pre-existing condition, then your insurance is going to be higher.
Yeah, true.
So, and the fact that this discriminates against an entire population, you know, it's not something that insurance companies really care about.
Yeah.
They might like us to think that way, but I don't think they really, you know, care about that kind of thing.
Mm.
They care about the bottom line.
But you know, I never thought about it that way. The only thing that shocked me was the initial information that black people do pay higher. But when you think about it that way, it's normal.
Yeah.
It's par for the course.
Well, in a way, it's similar. You could give another example, not about insurance policies, but the policy of not allowing gay people to donate blood, which only now is beginning to be changed in some countries.
Oh, right. But don't they scan the blood before they take it? I mean,
well, again, that's what I would say. Blood doesn't just enter the system without being checked first.
Right.
But that policy is still an ongoing policy. In the US, in European countries, as far as I know, in most of the world.
Yeah.
Even though, first of all, you can test for it, and secondly, it doesn't necessarily hold water. I mean, of course, there are people at risk in the gay community, but not all gay people. Just being gay does not make you more dangerous, more risky.
Yeah, that's silly.
Yeah, but it's just easier for the system to just say, well, we just won't take any blood donations from you. So, same thing.
Oh, God.
The fact that it discriminates against an entire group of people, in this case a sexual minority, doesn't seem to concern them.
And why should it actually, truthfully speaking? Anyway, my friend, thank you very much for joining me on my podcast today. Yes, go ahead.
I said it was a pleasure. I was a little bit anxious about it before we started, but it was a good experience.
Yeah, you did a good job. You're doing really well. So we'll try and have you on more often. I mean, with Desma, the three of us.
Sure.
Because you are such a wonderful well of information. And also, you have a very good knowledge of the Arabic language, Hebrew, even some
Aramaic.
Yes, Aramaic. It's like, y'all, this boy a brain, okay? He ain't nothing but a brain, okay? So,
thank you.
We are loving on you. Anyway, thank you very much, everybody. Have a very, very, very Merry Christmas or a Happy
Christmas.
Holiday or season's greetings, however you want to say it. So I'll get my pillow.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah. So
opportunity.
Absolutely. Everybody, have a very, very safe holiday, and we will see you next week. So take care of yourselves. And Adam, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Deuces.
What do you say? I'll do this. Yes.